The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
And now, nationally recognized financial experts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean Advisors. It's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean, thanks for joining us.
Glad you are here with us on this weekend prior to Christmas. Last weekend, not many shopping days left. Both myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors.
Better financial advisors than shoppers. I assure you that. Had the discussion today with the wife. My wife.
We won't go there.
My beautiful wife.
We will not go
about
there.
About the gift pool that we participate in her side of the family, and that I need to buy gifts for her family members.
How many gifts do you have to buy for her family members?
One.
How hard is that? Just be glad you don't have to buy for them all. Is this really what you're complaining about? That you have to buy one gift for her entire family? That sounds fantastic.
I think you might be right.
Think about it.
I think I might be pretty shallow and self-centered.
I mean, even if you're in a different religion, you might convert to Christianity just for having Christmas be so easy.
Oh, is that right?
I mean, think about it.
That's why.
You know, if you're Jewish, you got gifts every year, every day. I mean, you got to worry about those everyday gifts. This is like one.
This is
one
actually,
day for the whole lot.
This is what they should be dangling the carrot for Christianity.
And I don't mean any sacrilege on that, by the way, whatsoever.
No, so, none.
And Christmas is a very important time for me. Anyway. This is a financial program. We
get off track occasionally. So if you're new to the program, you'll find throughout this program that we actually discuss financial matters. We take incoming phone calls from people that have questions about their finances, that be their 401k.
You understand most of the people listening are not new. I bet 98% of the listeners on this program are not new. Now, beginning January, we're going to be on some more additional markets. So we've been doing this program for 20 years, broadcasting out of Sacramento. We meet with people just like yourself during the week, help them make wise choices with their money. We come and be your financial advisors on the air on the weekends. Started in KGO, the Bay Area, in May of 2015, this year. And beginning in January, we are taking the program down into Southern California, KEIB, the Patriot, in Los Angeles. And Kogo in San Diego, and KOA in Denver.
Yeah.
So other stations are beginning to pick us up.
So
I'm assuming that's in spite
we'll have
of
new
us.
Listeners then. Are you saying I should promote it then?
Yes, that was my long, yeah. You understand, Pat and I have these big meetings ahead of the program and kind of go through exactly what we're going to talk about and stay right on script.
Every step of the way.
Yes. But
back to the program.
Yes. So anyway, if you want to join the show with a question, we do take questions during the program. And if you're planning for your retirement, trying to figure out the best way to have things structured for your own personal retirement, or you're wondering if you have things invested properly at the right kind of asset allocation, I mean, nobody really knows what's going to happen in 2016, obviously. So it's important to have the proper asset allocation leading into that year and throughout
and
the year.
And to understand risk.
Yeah, so if anything, well, yes, because people take on more risk when the markets are up at the wrong times and take on less risk when things are low.
Most people.
Many people, yes. So you got a question about that or anything else financial related, the contact number to join the program is 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. And we'd love to take your call and answer your question and have you on the air talking about your financial matters. During the program, one of the things we're going to talk about is there's still some time to do some year-end planning. Then once the year's over, the planning time's done.
In terms of tax planning.
Yeah. So there are still some time. We're going to talk about some things to be thinking about that you might want to do Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday of next week.
Easy things.
Easy peasy. Anyway, we'll talk about some of the year-end planning. But before that, the last couple weeks, I'm reading these articles on the big brokerage firms and the change in the compensation that they are doing for their brokers or advisors.
And I have friends that work at these many big brokerage firms, and you're thinking, Pat, do you, friends? Well, okay. I know them through business circles. Are they close friends? Probably not. But in the conversations I'm having with them, as many of these large firms have been bought up by very big banks a number of years ago, it, as they predicted, as many predicted, the large banks are coming into these brokerage firms and changing things.
Yes.
Significantly. And you're seeing, and you might have an advisor at a large firm, a broker at a large firm, and you may see that they're leaving firms, that they're leaving the firms. It's not unusual.
And frankly, sometimes I wonder why they're not leaving. See, Mike, here's our challenge. And but before we badmouth those big brokerage firms, I'm going to preface it by saying there are some good people at these big firms. Okay, part of the challenge is that these firms have, they're publicly traded, so they have the public. Just like if you work for a company now, you know how important it is, publicly traded company. You know how important it is for that company to hit the number each quarter. So they're publicly traded companies. And they have multiple lines of business. They have many, many gods to serve, and many masters to serve.
Wait, which is they introduce new securities and bonds to the marketplace.
That's how they are all started.
Which is they're publicly, if someone comes out with an IPO or a new issue on a bond or a stock, they bring it to these large firms, and the large firms distribute it to people just like yourself.
And so what's happening, Morgan Stanley came out and said, look, we need you guys, you brokers, to refer more business over to the bank. So they have a financial incentive. They're offering pay each year of between $5,000 to $50,000 to advisors who get this, who get clients to have an average daily balance of $50,000 or $5,000 a month in deposits into Morgan Stanley. So they're telling the brokers, hey, look, here's what this is saying. If you want an extra bonus, make sure your clients have a bunch of cash sitting around that's not invested.
In our
bank.
Can
you believe that?
At our bank.
Yeah. Get them to have them stick some cash in the bank, and we'll write you a check for that. They'll also give bonuses up to $200,000 to advisors who can get clients to get loans from the bank.
So if you come in and you want to talk to your advisor about, you know, your portfolio, or should I fund my Roth IRA or not fund my Roth IRA, is my 529, and the advisor then starts serving two masters, you and the mortgage side of the bank and the mortgage division of the bank.
The issue I have with this, with these bonuses, is they're being incentivized to do something that may or may not be in your best interest.
And it's hard for you to tell.
They're clearly not acting as a fiduciary in a situation like this.
Not at all. Not at all.
So they're thinking, I could recommend this to my client, but you know, if I get him to take out a loan, I get paid a bonus that, and then they can take those dollars and invest it back with me as well. Because what Merrill Lynch is doing, they're, for people who aren't producing enough in fees and commissions, they're going to start cutting their pay, the percentage of the, so they all get some sort of percentage of what they produce.
So if you pay
the firm.
They call
it production too, by the way, just to give you any hint.
Yeah, they call it production.
Production, producing, not servicing.
So as an example.
Or advising.
They might get 60% of the gross revenues that come to
they
the
don't
house.
Get that high. 40% or
40 or 30 or 35 or 20.
They say, but if they're not hitting a certain number, if they're not generating enough fees and revenues, the percentage that they receive goes down. So now you've got some advisor, broker, I'm going to call, working at Merrill, trying to help clients the best he can or she can. It's getting near the end of the year. They realize, my number's not high enough this year.
Oh, it's going to cost me some money next year.
Because they're going to cut my percentage that I receive next year because I didn't produce enough. So they have a financial incentive to pick up the phone, call some of their clients and say, hey, Mr. Client, Mrs. Client, how about we do this with your money or do that with your money? These firms are structured with conflicts of interest. They're not bad firms. I'm not saying they're bad firms.
Scott, you can say that if you want. But the advisors might be fine advisors. But the
firms
themselves have put in inherent conflicts of interest based on this, because they need to hit a certain revenue number or net profitability number as a firm. And everyone gets that. Everyone investor gets that your advisor is going to get paid some money.
Yes.
Everyone gets that.
But you want to know what those conflicts are. Okay? So this is this was just disclosed in the last few weeks.
Yeah, it came out in a couple news articles.
Yes. You can Google it if you want. What is the pay for Morgan Stanley brokers or whatever? And you'll
or
probably,
Merrill Lynch. And it'll bring you to these types of articles. There were a number of them I read.
Now, let me give you an example of how I witnessed firsthand the damage that this could cause. This was back a number of years ago. There was a gentleman I knew from the gym who came up one day. I knew him casually. And he came up one day and he asked me about the reputation of this certain advisor. He mentioned the name. You know so-and-so. And I said, yeah. And he says, what do you think of him? And I said, I don't know him well, but he has a good reputation. I know that about him. He has a good reputation. And I suppose I could have at the time said, hey, why don't you come talk to me?
That wasn't the question the person asked you, though.
That's correct. And I'm not the kind of person who walks around passing out my business card trying to solicit business. That's the last kind of if he wanted to ask me about doing business with me, fine. But somebody asked him. But I said to him, I said, look, one thing, though. I said, just don't buy any products that the firm manufactures. What do you mean? I said, well, the firm's going to manufacture their own products. He will probably have an incentive to sell you that product over something else. So don't just, I said, just steer clear of that. Oh, okay.
Stay away from it completely.
So what happens? He didn't. He thought he bought this money market equivalent in, I think, around the year 2005. Interest rates were lower then. They came out with this product, said, oh, here's this product. It's going to be a cash equivalent. It's got a high interest rate. He put money in this. The financial crisis hit. This is his cash savings. This is not his at-risk money.
This is money that you want to keep warm
this
and
was
dry.
Cash, what, this is, he thought, a cash equivalent. It dropped by over 80%, 86 or 87%. The thing fell in value. It was a structured product that this firm had manufactured.
Highly leveraged.
And when I learned about this, I thought, man, I wish you would have taken my advice. And it's not that the broker was a bad person or that he wasn't smart. But the challenge is when you work for firms that are manufacturing their own product, these firms have a vested interest. They can't see clearly. They are conflicted. They can't judge their own product properly because they built it. Of course they're going to like it, right? Of course they're proud of it. So what happens? The product manufacturer, the person in charge of the product,
says, come on, we need to move this product.
Look how awesome this is. The analyst, everyone, isn't this awesome? It's great. And maybe everyone believed that. Because they weren't objective. It was a structural problem.
In the organization.
That same structural problem exists today.
Actually, I think it's more so. Those firms weren't owned by banks back then. They weren't trying to cross-sell mortgage products or deposit products.
Or annuities.
Or whatever else at that one point in time, or limited partnerships. They weren't owned by the
by
banks.
By and large. So, all this to say, our preference is working with an independent advisor, registered investment advisory firm that's not manufacturing a bunch of products to try to sell you, and that has a fiduciary legal obligation to put your interest first. If you at least have that, it's going to help you a great deal to avoid these kind of conflicts.
And don't be surprised if you have one of these brokers in the next 5 years, they leave and go out and start their own firm. Don't be surprised at all.
Oh, because a lot of them, they're in the structure. They don't like the structure.
They don't like
either.
It either. They don't like it. They're like, you want me to sell this so that I can hit this number, but I don't really want to sell that, but I'm going to do it anyway? They don't like it.
They do have a choice.
They do have a choice, and many of them are actually making that choice.
And some of them say, do I put my client's interest first or my career interest first? So, anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back here, we'll take some calls. 1-888-2-HANSEN to join the program. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Are you questioning if the advice you receive from your stockbroker or financial advisor is best for you? If so, run it by Scott Hansen and Pat McClain of Hansen McClain's Money Matters. Simply visit their website at moneymatters.com or call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Back to one of the longest running financial programs. Here's Hansen McClain's Money Matters. With the kids
jingle belling and everyone telling. Welcome back to Hansen McClain's Money Matters. Scott Hansen.
Pat McClain.
If you don't want to join us, 888-2-HANSON. It's 888-2-HANSON. And let's talk with Sheila. Sheila, you're with Hansen McClain.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. Hi, Sheila.
Hi. So here's the deal. I plan to retire in 2019 at the age of 59 and a half. The problem is...
You don't have any money.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, what am I doing wrong? I mean, I do have two plans. One is to retire and withdraw from my 401k to pay off my debt.
Okay.
Or two, continue working, still withdraw from my 401k to pay off my debt. So here's the situation. I have like $88,000 student loan. So that's really going to take up just about the value of my 401k today.
And how much is your 401k valued today?
It's just a little over $100,000.
Okay. So you have $88,000 in student loans, and you've got $100,000 plus minus in your 401k. So, by the way, that's not enough money to pay off your student loan because your 401k distributions will be taxable, and you'll end up with less than $88,000. So, sorry, that was the first bit of bad news I'm going to give you.
Right.
And you're 55 today, 56 today?
I'm 56.
Okay, and tell us about yourself. Will you be receiving a monthly pension in retirement?
Well, here's the thing. I don't plan to if I stick with the 2019 retirement goal because, yeah, I do have a monthly pension from a qualified plan.
Mm-hmm.
However, the value of it, I mean, at today is just the monthly, and this is, you know, payable at age 65 is just, you know, $1,300.
Got it. And what do you owe on your house?
I don't. I rent.
And will you stay in that rented house?
Probably not, because I know I'm not going to be able to probably afford it if I'm looking at the numbers today. So I'm thinking about just leaving California because, you know, I do have family that's from, you know, the southern state, so I probably will move there.
So let me ask a little deeper on this. So, you know, retirement means different things to different people, right? And there's some people that can't wait to retire because they don't want to, they just want to, they want to kick back. There's some that want to retire just because they want to find other areas that they can pursue and serve in different areas, that sort of thing. So you it sounds like you went back and got an education here recently. That's why
I
you
did.
$88,000 student loan.
Exactly.
Okay. So did you get this education in the field so that you can continue to work in this field after retirement?
Yes. So that's what I plan to do. I mean, I was going to immediately, like, you know, return back to the workforce, contract, or just working local, you know, eliminate the, you know, 4-hour commute round trip,
and
you know.
Are the student loans you have, are these all federal loans where you can restructure the payment?
Yes.
And have you done that?
Yeah, that's why it's higher.
What's that?
Oh, that's why the debt went up.
Yeah, it was only 66. So I'm at 88.
Okay, so yeah, you're deferring the payment, but the interest continues to accrue.
Right, right.
And but are these the federal loans that will eventually be forgiven?
No, not in my occupation, it won't.
And what is what will your occupation be?
My occupation is in human resources.
So that's what you went back to school for.
Right.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to recommend to you. I'm going to recommend that you go to moneymatters.com, and I did about 16-minute webinar called The 7 Personal Decision Points.
Okay.
And what it does is it walks you through the 7 things that you need to know about retiring. And okay. I want you to pay attention to the first, the second, and the 7th one especially.
Okay.
So the first one is, how much money do I need in retirement? That's the first thing I determine in the 7 personal decision points is required income needs. So the 7 personal decision points actually spells out retired. And the first question we always ask someone is, let's determine how much income you're going to need in retirement to maintain your same standard of living.
Right.
The second question is, what's going to happen to my expenses in retirement? Are they going to go up or down? And then the last one, and then there's taxes, investment, risk management, estate planning. And number seven is the distribution. Where is the money going to come from, and is it enough? So the questions you're asking me is, here's what I think I heard from Sheila was, I just want to quit my job as soon as I possibly can. Was I wrong?
Right. You are wrong. Because what my thought was, you know, at age 70 and a half, I won't be penalized. Of course, I'll be taxed on the
59
money.
And a half, correct?
Right, 59 and a half. So that was what I was thinking. I said, okay, I'll take that, wipe out my debt, you know, go back to work. And then, I don't know, I guess I'll have just my monthly pension as well as...
How much are your payments for your student loans?
Well, right now, since I'm in a hardship, I just paid $5.
Okay.
Okay, let me ask you this question. Now, this is... As financial advisors, we serve our clients first and everyone else. So if I were your financial advisor, I'm talking the radio, so I'm really not at this point. But I would recommend just continue to pay the $5 a month and never pay off the student loan.
Yeah, but then until I die, I can't do that.
Yeah, why can't you?
Well, one thing, if it's a government one, after 20
years. Scott, we're going to get so many nasty letters.
I didn't create the rules.
We didn't create the rules. So I would explore.
It's no different than if there's a tax deduction and someone misses I say, look, you should take this.
Scott,
deduction.
Every time this stuff comes up, we get these nasty letters. Look,
all right, what if she was your sister?
I would do exactly this for Sheila. Scott, your purpose is we serve the clients based upon the current structure, which
all
the government
gets.
I'm not making any moral judgments on whether Sheila should pay or not repay this loan. But from a financial standpoint, the first thing I would look at is what happens if you defer these loans for X amount of years. What happens, right?
That's what I would spend. That's where I'd spend all my time, because they can come after your Social Security as well.
Exactly. That's what I know. I learned that from Susie Omran.
Correct.
Garnish your Social Security.
Yeah. So we
there's also, if these are all the federal programs, and the administration continues to expand this, by the way. And most of this happened. This was part of the Affordable Care Act that increased some of these limits. I'm not just to blame it. We can blame previous administrations and Congress as well for this, from the taxpayer standpoint. But situation like this,
it questions what your hurry to pay off these student loans are if you don't know the ramifications of keeping the student loans forever.
Correct. That's the best. So that's $100,000 roughly we're talking about, right? $88,000 loan.
Right.
It's a lot of money. If I were in your situation, I would get to understand these loans really well. I'd do whatever research is required to find out what exactly are my monthly requirements. What's the maximum amount that can be assessed against me monthly? Then I would look into the future and say, what implications will that have when I'm older and on Social Security?
And so,
if you find it's always $5 a month because you'll
or 10% of your income,
10% of your it's not just income; it's
some sort of
income
a formula
after like poverty level or something. Yeah.
So, what you want to do?
So it could be next to nothing.
Sheila, is you want to understand that? So you're going right to the solution, right?
Right.
We'd like to better understand the problem. So I agree with Scott. Take a look at these student loans and the ramifications, and then go to moneymatters.com.
And frankly, we're not experts at student loans.
No, no. And actually, it's hard to find an expert on student loans now because it's changing constantly.
Yeah. And I know there's some companies out there. I've heard them advertised. I don't know if they're reputable or not.
So take a look at that and then go to the 7 personal decision points and walk through that. And that will help you determine whether you can retire or not retire. But you shouldn't retire just to pay off these student loans. I know that for certain.
And actually, to get a little further, because if you quit this job being over age 55, you would have access to those dollars. Because
you don't have to wait till 59 and a half.
That's another loophole that we're...
Yeah, money that comes from a 401k, as long as you separate from services available at age 55, you don't have to wait till 59 and a half.
Yeah, Shay, Sheila, we're up against the clock.
Appreciate the call.
Glad you called, and I wish we had some better... I really want to understand exactly how this works before I made any decisions on this. We're taking a quick break. You're listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-242-6766. Get a podcast of Hanson McLean's Money Matters delivered each week to your computer or mobile device. Simply visit moneymatters.com. And now, back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell, rock. Jingle bell time and jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you're sticking with this program or just joining the program at the news break at the bottom of the hour. Whatever the case may be, we're here talking about financial matters on this.
The 19th.
What do you mean the 19th?
It's the 19th of December.
Yeah, it's Christmas is coming soon.
Yeah, it's the weekend before Christmas.
Are you having a big gathering at your house at Christmas?
No. Unless things change, and it's, everything's always fluid in our family.
Before we go back to, really?
Yeah, pretty fluid.
I've always thought you have a lot of structure in your household.
This year, it's pretty fluid.
I've been working with you almost 25 years. Your family has always been run with tremendous structure.
This year's relatively...
Tonight, we're having lasagna. It's Thursday. It's lasagna night. That is... or whatever.
What
right?
happens was perfect for me because I married an accountant, and I'm not the most structured person.
You put
person
the jelly
the
on this piece of the side of the bread.
Kids?
Of course, any dad who's trying to make their kids lunch knows exactly that.
Oh, yes. Right. Yes.
All right. So, anyway, this is a financial program. To join our the call here, it's 888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON, 888-2-HANSON, to join the program and have a question for us. Hanson's HANSON, by the way.
Or you can go to moneymatters.com, moneymatters.com, and you can type in a question. You can. There's a button that says talk to Scott and Pat.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. We're talking moneymatters.com.
We're talking with Jerry. Jerry, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, good morning. How you doing, guys?
Hi. Good. How you doing?
Good, good. Hey, my question is we've gotten in debt, you know, about $20,000, and we're just barely making minimum, and I have a 401k plan, and I have $50,000 in it, and we're considering our options, whether it'd be wise to try to borrow from that, you know, and pay all this debt off. So that's the reason why I'm calling.
What's the, how did you accumulate $20,000 in debt?
Was there a health issue?
It's just been body years of from vacations to you know, housing stuff, and then there's some medical bills too.
Okay, tell me about your house. Do you own a home?
Yes, we do.
And what's the value of the home?
See, now that's for where I think we're just a little bit under.
You're underwater. Okay.
Yeah.
So we hate borrowing money out of a 401k.
Yes.
And the reason is?
There's a couple of reasons. First of all, when you borrow from a 401k, you're really not borrowing the money in the sense that the assets in the 401k, let's say that in the 401k you had, I'm just throwing it out there, let's say you had the $50,000 invested 100% in a total stock market index, as an example, right? If you borrowed, let's say, half that amount out, let's say you borrowed $20,000 from that, the plan goes and sells $20,000 worth of securities. So you're not really borrowing against those securities. Those securities are being sold. The 401k sends you the check. Then they deduct out of your paycheck for the next 5 years.
To pay those back.
To pay those back.
And if you don't pay them back, it becomes a taxable event to you, plus a 10% federal penalty and 2.5% state penalty in the state of California.
So we've seen people take loans from a 401k, have a balance, loan balance, then find that they get a job offer 6 months down the road somewhere else, or maybe they lose their job.
Or that they really couldn't control their spending.
You can't take that loan and transfer it to your new employer. It must be repaid, and if you can't repay it, it's treated as a taxable withdrawal. So now, instead of having $20,000 in credit card debt, you owe the IRS $10,000 in taxes and penalties.
And the IRS is not nearly as friendly as the credit card companies. The IRS very rarely sends you another statement saying, hey, make the minimum, or, oh, if you want to borrow some more, we'd love to come to the table.
That's right.
They never do that. So what you've got, Jerry, is a budget problem. You're spending more money than you make. It is a budget problem. And the only thing that's going to fix it is you fixing your budget.
Okay.
Or live with it. Or live with it.
Right.
Right? But
right.
And to Pat's point, live with, last I looked, with the average credit card balance for Americans, the average American owes $9,800 or somewhere there. There's different studies. It's about 10. The average American owes about 10 grand on credit cards.
But here's what we do know is people actually have different. And so we're both formally educated in financial services, right? The school, the colleges, all that stuff.
And certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant.
When I first got into
college
the profession,
for financial planning in American college.
If you sat down with me, I would have said, okay, let's, you know, get this $20,000 paid off. And then we would have paid it off and then come back 3 years later and you have $20,000 on your credit card because $20,000 was your risk tolerance for debt. Right?
Right. Okay.
So
right.
Some people, you know, and you can.
I've seen people with high incomes always have credit card.
And so it's just a psychological thing. So if it's really bothering you, you will change your lifestyle to pay down that $20,000, or you'll live with it. But you shouldn't take the money from your 401k.
Okay.
Right.
And if you want a strategy to pay it off, first of all, there's some decent apps. I had a client of mine retired with a very large 401k balance, but always had a little bit of consumer debt. She'd show me this app to get debt, and it helps you analyze. But one strategy is to, let's say you have six different debtors out there.
Credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
Is pay the minimum on it all except for the one that has the smallest balance. Whatever has the smallest balance, work hard to get that one paid off. It might only be $200, but you get that one paid off. Now you've gone from six down to five. Now yeah. You do the same thing. You pay the minimum on everything except for that fifth one. You work extra hard to get that paid off. Suddenly you've gone from five to four.
And psychologically, so, you're making strides.
You've just reduced your debt by a third. Now your debt itself might only have dropped $500, but you've the number of those bills you get each month with these big balances on them, there's you've reduced those down
so
from six.
Jerry,
to
do four. Not touch your 401k. Touch your budget. Are you married?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so
well,
is your
$20,000 today, taking $20,000 from your 401k, even if it's through a loan, that can cost you $50,000, $100,000 in the future.
Yeah. So your wife,
oh, wow,
your wife and you need to be on the same page in terms of getting the debt paid off. So I appreciate the call.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck, Jerry. And
right.
It's not an uncommon thing by any means.
No.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate the time.
All right. Yeah, and it's just amazing, Pat, how so many of us Americans get comfortable with a certain amount of debt. And it's
as much driven by psychological factors as
and
it is by financial.
There are some people out here, there's some people listening right now that are about to pull their hair out and thinking, how foolish can someone be to pay all that extra interest? Why would they do that? But the fact is, we all have choices with how we use our dollars. From a financial advisor standpoint, is that the best way to spend money?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it's a bad idea.
But I also see people that have tremendously large savings balance in banks, earning next to nothing, or in their checking account, way more than they'd ever need. And they say, oh, Scott, I like that's just kind of my comfort zone.
Well,
that's fine,
that's
too.
That's your money.
Is it the best thing? Would a financial advisor say it's the best thing with their finances? No.
But it's your money.
And you get to choose. If you want to go out to spend money on dinner and a nice bottle of wine, and you've got the money, that's your choice.
Your money.
So we all have those decisions and choices we make. And it just seems that many Americans are comfortable having some credit card debt. There's many things bad about it from a financial standpoint, and one of which, frankly, is the fact that once you get into some debt, it's very easy for these teaser rates to disappear, and suddenly you get straddled with high interest rates.
And
19%.
It's a bad 26%. Idea to not have a cash reserve. And if you have a cash reserve, you shouldn't have any credit card debt. You should have cash reserves. But the reality is most Americans.
Well, none of us should have any consumer debt ever.
Oh.
Right?
We should live
save money for a car,
Yes.
You know, I mean, we
well,
all...
that's the way it used to be before consumer debt was actually...
You know, car loans now are longer than ever. There's a lot of new car loans that are 9 years. A car's not going to last 9 years. It could last.
Most people won't keep it for 9 years, but it could last for 9 years.
I was talking to someone the other day. They have a 1984 Datsun they've owned since it was new or relatively new. 1984 Datsun. I said, he said, just keep getting repaired. He says a lot of people probably would have just given up on it. Not us. We just keep getting repaired. He says it runs great.
I'm guessing that they have a relatively high account balance.
They do, yes. They say, why waste money on a new car when I can invest it elsewhere and do much better with my money? Yes.
Yeah, I guess.
And by the way, I was talking to someone who worked at a Mercedes dealership, and he said, you would not believe the kind of things that the things people will do just to get into a Mercedes. People who have no business whatsoever of driving a Mercedes. He says, no business.
And he sells them. It's his business.
It's their car dealers.
Yeah, it's his business to get you into
the car.
Look,
when you go to a car dealer, you know what the deal is. Yeah. They are there to sell you a car and then to service that car once they sell it to you. You know that. They don't say, we're fiduciary transportation counselors.
We think this is a bad idea.
We're going to look out for your best interest at all time. And we think, yeah.
They don't say, you really should drive something a little bit more downscale than a Mercedes. They don't say that.
No. You know, it's an awful lot of money. Matter of fact, I looked and had you put this money into a good quality mutual fund instead over the last 20 years, instead of buying Mercedes, you would have had X dollars. That's also a decision people make. To spend money on things.
Actually, the last time I bought a car.
Horrible investments.
I got
cars are horrible investments, obviously, unless you buy some old used.
Last time
I bought. That Datsun was actually, he said it's worth more than he paid for it.
Last time I bought a car, I got in the
North. I didn't remind him about net present.
Did you explain? Last time I bought a car.
We didn't go into time value money.
I got in an argument with a sales manager about something, and I said to him, I wouldn't buy.
That's weird.
Wouldn't me get in an argument with a sales manager?
I know you don't like the tactics that they use at the car. Who likes the tactics?
I said to him, I wouldn't buy a car from you over the last dealership on earth. And then I said, but come to think of it, I'd have to. Because
therefore, where do I sign?
Because you'd be the last dealership on earth and you'd be the only place I could get a car.
And you said that to him in the midst of an argument?
Yes, but it was completely lost on him. Completely lost on him that I'd have to buy a car from him if he was the last dealer on earth.
You said, I wouldn't buy a car from you at the last dealership on earth. Wait a minute. But if you were, I guess I would because you'd be the only one there?
Yeah. I said that to him.
And he didn't come back with anything?
No, he just stared at
me. And did he sell you the car?
I bought it.
He didn't sell it to me. Did the rest of the listeners notice that? Did he sell you the car was the question. The answer was no. I bought it. I have a feeling you knew what you wanted.
He came around.
Oh, he came around. He's... you convinced him that you were, you know.
All right, let's go to a break. Can we go to a break? I'm getting uncomfortable now.
I'm finding this quite amusing. Anyway, 888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program, 888-2-HANSON. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Got a question? Visit moneymatters.com or call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Advice without an agenda. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Christmas,
just like welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
And let's talk to Caprice. Hi, Caprice. Welcome to Hanson McLean.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a question. I am going to be a brand new landlord. And I was, because I can't find anything online, I researched it. Is there any IRS tax implications to renting a rental house on my own property that I own outright?
Okay, so explain to me.
You have a second residence on your
property? On the property?
Yeah.
And okay. You're going to rent it out?
Yeah.
Well, any income you receive from any commercial activity, business activity, needs to be reported on the IRS.
And do you own the house outright?
Yes, I own the property and home, and I'm going to renovate a building and turn it into a rental cabin.
Okay.
So what happens is you need to report whatever income comes in, plus you get to deduct any expenses you have, current expenses. In addition, whatever the capital costs are for the home, including improvements, you get to depreciate that. So write off a little bit of it each year.
So do you have an accountant or a tax preparer?
No, I do not.
Okay, you need to get an accountant or a tax preparer to do this for you.
Yeah.
You don't want to do it yourself.
Okay.
Because if you make a mistake, the penalties can be large. Now, have you ever had a rental property before?
No.
And how close will this apartment or this little cabin on your land be to your primary residence?
Oh, I would say 50 feet.
And how much will it rent for?
Approximately $625 per month.
And do you know the person that's going to rent it from you?
No, I do not.
That's a big issue.
And why are you doing this?
Extra income.
Do you need the income?
Yeah, for retirement income.
How much will it cost you to improve the property in order to generate the rent?
Upwards $15,000.
$15,000. Okay. So the return on investment makes sense. The return on lifestyle is unknown.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind when you are screening the tenants. You may actually want to, the first time out or second time out, use a rental agency that knows how to screen a tenant.
Right.
Because it's easy getting, it's like marriage.
I have a family member who has a ranch of sorts with a primary home on it and two other homes on the property, small. One, a little cabin. I think it was probably the original cabin that when the ranch was established. And the other one is a secondary house for whatever reason that's quite close to the primary house. Originally, when they first bought the property, they thought, we'll rent out both of these.
Yeah.
The house, they said, I don't care how much rent we're going to get. No one's going to be renting right that close to us again.
Oh, they had a tenant in it.
Uh-huh. And even in the other cabin, they've had some issues. So
do you really need this income?
And the only reason they do is so there's kind of a caretaker to part of the ranch. But
Do you really need this income?
Well, speaking of ranch, I grew up on a 4,000-acre ranch.
Wow,
in Northern California.
That's a real ranch, 4,000 acres.
We're talking.
Am I? So
that's talking about ranchettes.
It's 0.4 acres. I think it's more than. It's a ranch, but
now I'm on. That was a family ranch. My mother grew up there, and my great great grandfather, 1837. They've been in Northern California. Straight over from Europe.
So how much do you need the $600 a month?
I'm definitely going to move on this.
Okay, so here's
to
what...
To pad my retirement.
Got it. So get an accountant to do your taxes.
Okay.
And then the first tenant in, use an agency to screen the tenant. And the problem is, the lower the rent...
Right.
The bigger the problem.
Right, gotcha. Gotcha.
The lower the rent, the bigger the problem.
Not always.
On the average,
I don't mean to sound elitist because I rented places that were $300 a month. And
I had two.
Yeah. So anyway, good luck to you. Yeah. Appreciate the call, Caprice.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
All right,
Caprice. Thanks for answering my question.
Right.
Thank you, guys.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
When I first moved to Sacramento, I rented a room. A bedroom from somebody. A bedroom. I didn't have even enough money to rent a little place like that.
So I didn't mean to sound elitist because...
No, but if someone's budget's super tight, that's why they're looking at a $600 place. It doesn't take much to happen in their world where they suddenly can't pay the rent.
That is correct.
And they live right near you, and you develop a relationship with them.
And all of a sudden you can't pay the rent, and... You're just like, I can't throw family with kids. I had a friend of mine tried to rent from me, and I said, I cannot let you rent from me. And he said, why? And I said, because I could never throw you out of the rental house. I could never do it. And so from a business standpoint.
I only rent to people I don't like. Well, if I don't like them and they move in, I'm not going to get to know them.
I'm not get to know them. not get to know them. I mean,
you know, it's interesting, Pat. That is one of those challenges. And if you've had a rental property, you know exactly what we're talking about. It's one of those challenges with residential rentals is they're people. And it's when it's business transaction, it's a commercial property. It's like you've got bad business.
You know,
sorry about that, but that's business, not my problem. When these are, it's when they're people
with kids and lives that you care about and you get to know them. And the next thing you know,
sometimes people, it's a series of poor choices. They're in a situation. Sometimes it just kind of seems
it's
to
life.
Happen.
It's external factors.
And
so
some people have a lot of and bad things happen.
He's still a friend of mine. And he said, that doesn't make any sense. And I said, let's put it this way. You're in an accident. You become disabled. You can't go back to work. You can't make the payment. I cannot throw you out of the house because I know you well. I know your wife well. I know your children. Does that sound cruel?
That's reality.
Okay. Hey, well.
No, but there's a difference. The closer it is, it's just like when there's a natural disaster across the world. It's so far away. You don't even think about it. If it's next door and you're not out there helping, then you're the jerk, right? So
Scott, at the beginning of the show, we talked about some tips.
For year-end planning. Now, we understand there's not a lot of time, being the December the 19th, but you do have some time Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, of some year-end things that can have an impact for your tax. So we're just going to kind of run through a few things. First of all, any charitable contribution you make will be this year will be considered in your tax plan. If you gift to charity at all and you have any appreciated asset, appreciated security, a mutual fund, a stock you've owned a long time.
Even better.
You can gift that. Would be even better. So any gift you want to make. Any state income taxes you pay this year, assuming you're not subject to AMT, state income taxes, you'll get deduction for this year. So if you think that this year is going to be a higher income year than next year, you might want to take advantage of paying state income taxes prior to December 31st.
Any deductible contributions you can make to your IRAs?
You got until April 15th on those. But if you're self-employed and you want to set up a solo K,
you need to do it by 12/31, but you don't have to fund it.
But you have to have it set up by that period of time. Once December 31st is gone, you can't set up a solo K or KEO or other type of pension plan. Property taxes if this is a higher income year, the next year, you can pay property taxes. Roth conversion, if this is a low income year for you and you think next year is going to be a higher one and it makes sense, all things being equal, now is the time to do the Roth conversion.
If you're gifting any part of your estate.
Trying to get your estate down, giving the kids $14,000 a year or whatnot.
Now is the time.
Now is the time you want to do that. So, no, there's not a lot of time left.
There's
a few other things. But you still got time. And it sure beats shopping for Christmas presents. Yeah. I mean, for crying out loud.
And if you've got an advisor, they may have covered this with you previously.
It's hopefully at some point in time in your relationship with the advisor, they've just uncovered some of your goals and wishes. Although I recently dealt with somebody that had an advisor for years, was gifting a substantial amount to charity in cash, was not doing any gifting securities at all, and they had tons of options there. The advisor for years missed it, and we're talking six-figured contributions. Just amazing. Anyway, we're out of time. Hope everyone has a wonderful Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever you celebrate, but enjoy the holidays, and we'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.